Discussions of the defense industrial base usually focus on U.S. companies, but U.S. companies are looking at overseas markets more and more, and overseas companies are finding ways to do business in this country. Former Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn is Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies and my guest on Pentagon Solutions this week. Every Wednesday at the beginning of the 4 o'clock hour, we look at the issues the Pentagon is dealing with and talk about potential solutions for those challenges. Bill Lynn and Admiral James Stavridis, U.S. Navy retired, are co-chairs of the Task Force on Strategy, Technology, and the Global Defense Industry, organized by the Center for a New American Security. And Bill explains what the task force will undertake.
The intent of this study is to look at the defense industry as we go into another budget downturn. The last budget downturn in the 90s led to substantial changes in defense industry. I think we should anticipate that this downturn will at least challenge defense industry, and it's certainly something we need to look at. The defense industry is an enormous asset in terms of giving our troops the technical capabilities they need to be superior to any potential combination of adversaries.
You work for a company that is based in Italy and does a lot of business in the United States. And I noticed the global defense industry is part of the title of what this task force is going to look at. What's driving that holistic approach? Because it strikes me that in the past, oftentimes these task forces or commissions or whatever have focused on the United States defense industrial base and hasn't been this holistic approach.
Well, I think it's what you need to look at here is what are the trends that are going to influence defense industry as we go into this period. And I think there's a number of them. You know, one of them is we've seen greater and greater use of commercial technology in defense. It's now about a third of the acquisition budget is really commercial. We've seen the R&D migrate from a heavy defense focus to we're now pulling more from commercial, the commercial side of industry. And we've seen a globalization of defense industry. More and more companies are trying to do business overseas. More overseas companies are trying to do business here.
What impact does that have on all sides of that equation, the fact that the United States companies want to do more business overseas and vice versa?
Well, I think the impacts are generally positive. I think that by having this greater globalization of defense industry, particularly as you have a contracting budget, what that allows you to do is maintain competition even in areas as in the U.S. If you just looked at the U.S. industrial base itself, there might only be one competitor. If you look globally, you can get two or three. That's going to ensure we get the best technology at the best price. Similarly, not all of the best technology is U.S.-based. There's significant technological resources in Asia and Europe, and again, you want to draw on those to make sure we're giving our fighting forces the best equipment. And then finally, we need to look and ensure our market is open to foreign competitors if we want our companies to have a fair shot overseas. So for all those reasons, I think we ought to embrace this globalization of defense industry.
You talked about the R&D, and one of the things that I had heard your colleagues that are still inside the Defense Department say is they're going to look to industry to take on some risk, and especially in the R&D area. What does that mean for somebody like you who's now on the other side of that equation and one of the companies that DOD is going to be asking to take on some more of that risk?
But I think asking industry to take on more risk is a reasonable request as long as you set the system up so they can be rewarded if they succeed in this risky behavior. So you need to ensure that the incentive structure is such that if you take risk on an R&D contract, you'll be able to get the production contract that supports it, and you'll be able to make money. At the end of the day, companies are going to be making financial decisions. If they think they can get a fair return from their investment, they'll make the investment even if it's risky.
Mm-hmm. Is it your sense that that incentive structure exists now, or is there some room for fine-tuning, or maybe do we need a major reform in that area?
Well, I think there is a need for reform. I think that the acquisition system itself is just far too complicated and encrusted, and it makes it difficult for particularly for commercial companies to break in. And if, as I said, if a lot of the technology we're going to need in the future is coming from the commercial side of the house, we need to be able to be sure that those companies are going to be able to compete fairly and effectively in the defense marketplace.
Your team sent me some notes ahead of our conversation, Bill, and one of them that jumped out at me, only one-third of current U.S. defense contractors have any significant commercial business, and the overwhelming majority of their international business involves exporting U.S. defense technology. It doesn't sound like that's something that you think is a positive. How is that happening, and what's the role of either the players themselves or maybe the U.S. Defense Department in changing that landscape?
Well, a couple of things there. One is I think we're still living with the industry we created in the last downturn in the early 90s. In that downturn, two major things happened. The defense industry consolidated down from basically 30-plus primes down to, you know, 6 or 8 prime contractors. And then second, the major companies, the large companies that had defense divisions largely sold those divisions. So you ended up with the industry you've described, where you have basically a specialization in defense companies and only a few of them. I think as you move forward, you're not going to be able to rerun that same playbook in the next downturn. You can't consolidate much further, and the Defense Department said as recently as this week that they wouldn't really approve of further consolidation at the top tier. And second, there aren't really any many commercial companies left that can eliminate defense divisions. So I think you're more likely to see more commercial companies actually come into the defense business if we can make it attractive. And I think you're going to see, as I said, more of a globalization. There's going to be more competitors at a global level.
Why is it healthy for the companies that are already in the space to have more commercial companies who maybe aren't playing or aren't playing prominently in the defense space to come into that market? It would seem at a time of budget downturns to have more competitors wouldn't necessarily be healthy for the companies themselves. I'm not talking about the broader defense industrial base.
Well, I mean, everybody's going to have to look at, you know, their interests from their particular perspective. But I think it's going to be very hard to fight the general trend that in terms of 3D printing, in terms of information technology, cyber defense, some of the best technology is outside defense. And if you try and fight that, you'll, over the longer term, lose. The better approach is going to be more enlightenment to try and embrace it and try and figure out how do you take advantage of that commercial technology.
And compete in those areas exactly. In which other people are trying to compete as well. You talked about living with the defense industry that we created in the last drawdown in the 90s. What did we learn from that drawdown vis-a-vis the defense industrial base that does apply this time around if the consolidation piece that we saw last time doesn't apply this time?
Well, I think the consolidation piece may still apply, but probably not at the top tier. I think you may see at the middle and lower tiers, you may see some consolidation. I think that at that point there was an attention to what kind of one of the lessons I think you want to learn is DOD needs to pay attention. I think Bill Perry led the department at the time into a very serious consideration of what the department needed and what they needed to maintain. They had some famous event called the Last Supper where Secretary Perry met with all the defense industry and talked about the coming consolidation and helped, I think, to shape it. As I said, I don't think you're going to run the same playbook this time, but I think you want to have the same level of Defense Department senior interest. The industrial base is very important to the success of the department, and the leadership needs to pay attention to what happens.
I played on this program when you were still in DOD highlights of you talking about the shaping of the industrial base and the landscape of it. I've played comments from Dr. Carter, from Mr. Kendall, and others. What does that look like, though, from the perspective of industry, and how does someone in your position view the Defense Department talking about that, mostly from a level of comfort, as in how comfortable are you to hear people talking about the potential future of your business and maybe even down to the level of strategy?
I mean, you have to look, I think, as the department, if you're in defense industry, the department is your customer, and in many cases, your only customer. And so you want to have an open dialogue. You certainly want them thinking about you. You don't want them making decisions for you, but Ash Carter, Frank Kendall, Ash's left office, Frank is still there. They're not trying to make decisions for industry. But I think, you know, they're trying to ensure that they have a viable industrial base to be able to support the department going forward. And I'm very comfortable with them in that role.
That is former Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn, Chief Executive Officer at DRS Technologies, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He and Admiral James Stavridis, U.S. Navy retired, co-chairs of the Task Force on Strategy, Technology, and the Global Defense Industry, organized by the Center for a New American Security. And my conversation with Bill continues in a moment on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. Many of the changes the Defense Department will undergo in the coming years will have cultural implications, but the Pentagon's demonstrated it's difficult to change some of its most deeply embedded cultural traits. Former Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn is Chief Executive Officer at DRS Technologies and my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He and Admiral James Stavridis, U.S. Navy retired, are co-chairs of the Task Force on Strategy, Technology, and the Global Defense Industry, organized by the Center for a New American Security. Bill Lynn explains how culture shifts at DOD might permit the agency to leverage innovation.
Shakeup is enormously difficult. I mean, there's been, I think, over 130 studies of acquisition reform, and all those studies were done by a group of dopes, or this is a really, really hard problem. I think it's the last. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very, very challenging problem. Part of it is what you said. There's an inertial impact. People get used to the processes. They understand the processes they have. They're reluctant to change them. Part of it is it's just such a large, complex organization that it's hard to make any kind of changes, even from the very top. And part of it is the level of oversight for the Department of Defense is so high that the penalty for making a mistake is high. And so we put all of these processes, all of these audits, all of these reviews, all of these hearings, and all of that encrusts the whole process. None of them individually are wrong or wrong-headed, but the aggregation of that structure makes everything slow and difficult.
Is this to the level, though, of revamping DFARS, or is there some incremental change that can happen that will be able to give the system the flexibility that you'd like to see?
In the end, I think it's gonna be hard not to be incremental, but I think you have to keep at it. You have to attack the system in a way that you chip away at this incrustation, and that you make the decisions faster, that you focus more on the timing of the decisions, try and constrict that timeline, which inevitably stretches out. But I'd be very doubtful that, as I said, after those 130 studies, if there's a magic or a silver bullet, we've all missed it. Mm-hmm. And so almost surely there isn't. And we're just going to have to chip away. It's going to be arduous work, but I think if people work at it, you have the incentive with the constricting budget to make this better.
You note NATO's Smart Defense Initiative portends a better way to pool technology investment resources, share cost burdens, and open the aperture more fully to embrace joint development and other related activities. Tell me what the NATO Smart Defense Initiative is and how it works.
Well, at the end of the day, those, I think, are a lot of words that are really trying to get the aggregation of countries in NATO to optimize their buying. And the challenge of that is essentially sovereignty, is each nation tends to want to have a complete set of capabilities in their military. And that may not make fiscal or strategic sense. But what you're trying to do is get individual countries to specialize in particular aspects of NATO's defense to get more efficiency that way. But the challenge is to overcome that natural sovereign impulse to want to have everything within your borders. And that's just generally with most of the countries in NATO, that's just not possible.
And what can we take away from that to apply to the situation we find ourselves in today?
Well, I think we should take the same approach, is that if we can lower the parochialism, we'll make better decisions. If we can be more open-minded about foreign sources of technology, if we can reduce the political decision-making, make decisions more on the basis of what's best for the fighting forces rather than what might be best for individual sectors or individual geographic locations, I think in the end we'll make better decisions for the country.
Reduce political decisions about defense. You understand what the big ask is that you're trying to pull
off
there.
It's tough. As I said, you're going to have to do it incrementally, and this has been around a long time. If you go back to the Continental Congress, the original plan for buying frigates was to buy 7 frigates, all of the same design, and to build them all in the same yard to get greater efficiency. After the Continental Congress intervened, we bought 7 different designs and built them in 7 different states. So this has been there. It's not going to be easy to change.
You write about the possibility of going back to the days of defense commercial conglomerates. Is that a good thing? Is that a desirable thing for the Defense Department? And what impact does all of this have, if any, on the taxpayer who is ultimately paying for all of this?
I mean, I don't know yet whether going to, you know, having more defense divisions in large commercial enterprises is good. I think it's something we ought to evaluate. It worked reasonably well before. Whether it's the time to for that to reappear, I'm not sure. I think it's something we ought to take a look at. It's one of the issues that Admiral Stavridis and I in the study at CNAS will take a look at. I think there's also a possibility we might look at an analogy in the automobile industry. The automobile industry, if you remember 30, 40 years ago, was fairly parochial. It was somewhat unpatriotic to buy an Asian or a European car back, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. Since then, that really has fallen away, and it's fallen away because, one, American car companies are selling many more cars abroad, and European and Asian car companies are building many more cars here. It's really become a globalized industry. That's been a benefit to the American consumer. It's been a benefit to the American worker. I think if you look at defense industry, you may see a similar globalization trend. There'll be more foreign companies with jobs here. There'll be more American companies selling overseas. If in the end we get better technology for a better price for our forces, that's a good outcome.
But to use your automobile analogy, that shift in willingness of Americans to buy foreign-made cars was driven largely by a perception that the American cars weren't that good anymore. Is there a parallel there in what we're seeing? I know I might be asking a biased observer, but when we look at a global defense market, are there products and systems that maybe aren't available to the United States Department of Defense or aren't available in sufficient quantity because they're not a potential customer right now that we're missing out on?
I think there are some sectors where we can find advantage in buying overseas, although, you know, U.S. still far and away has the strongest defense industry, both in terms of capability and technology. But the other thing that happened, going back to your question, the automobile industry, is, yeah, I think the U.S. industry did fall behind, but I wouldn't say they're behind now. I think the competition, they stepped up. That global competition improved their performance.
I want to go back to the task force that you're heading along with Admiral Stavridis at CNAS. Prospectus says that you'll examine key strategic and technological trends, current state of the industry, viability of the existing competitive environment. I know that no leader of an effort like this likes to admit that he has preconceived notions about what you're going to find, but certainly with your experience, you have a finger on the pulse of all of those issues. What is your sense as you begin about at least where to look, if not what you expect to find?
Well, I mean, we've talked about a lot of it. I think that we need to try and place ourselves in the stream of trends that are moving in defense industry. I think we need to take advantage of commercial technology. I think we need to embrace rather than fight globalization. And I think we need to find a way to simplify and improve the acquisition process. Those are all hard things to do, but I think the key to success for maintaining our defense industry is to find our way to make those trends supportive rather than destructive.
What is your sense of a timeline and a product that you'll have at the conclusion of this task force effort?
We're looking towards the late spring, early summer for a release.
So this is a quick turnaround. This is not something you're going to spend a lot of time going through process. You're doing your work and getting it out there.
We're going to do a pretty intensive period over the next few months and try and get the conclusions. This isn't going to be solved with this study, but we think we can at least initiate a debate and try and point at least in the direction of what we think might be positive solutions.
And that's where I wanted to finish up, which is once you have your findings and you make them available to decision makers, how do you get that incorporated into the forward-moving agenda of the Department of Defense and the industrial base rather than just having it be a product that sits on a shelf or is hung on a website and is there for somebody to find?
Well, I think, you know, there we're counting on the group that we've assembled, which I think has a lot of credibility with the Department of Defense, and not just the U.S. Department of Defense. We've tried, as you said at the outset, to assemble a global group. So we have a former Italian Minister of Defense, a former British Minister of Defense, a former Australian Chad, plus numerous former officials in the U.S. and U.S. and foreign defense industry. I think this group has influence and credibility globally, and so we would be hopefully using that to leverage people looking at the results of this study.
And that's former Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn, Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies now, and my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He and Admiral James Stavridis, U.S. Navy retired, co-chairs of the Task Force on Strategy, Technology, and the Global Defense Industry, organized by the Center for a New American Security. And you can read more about the task force and hear my entire conversation with Bill Lynn, including what else you should know about the work of that task force, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon.